This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
Breaking news, Rogers Communications is looking to shed jobs, reportedly offering buyouts to half its 25,000 employees. A company spokesperson told the Globe and Mail, Rogers is taking steps to adjust its cost structure to reflect the business realities of the current environment. Some business units won't be eligible for the offer, including on-air talent, Sportsnet employees, and union workers.
The Rogers announcement that you heard in the opening clip is really just the tip of the iceberg of developments involving one of Canada's dominant communications companies. Rogers has seen rising consumer complaints. It's cutting capital expenditures, increasingly pivoting towards sports and media, and now looking to dramatically cut its workforce. 3 years after the Rogers-Shaw merger, is this simply the predicted outcome of allowing that merger to go through? Is it a function of AI in a changing marketplace? What role does regulation play in it? And what of the political promise to watch Rogers like a hawk? To help answer those questions, I'm joined by Peter Nowak, a veteran telecom journalist. Peter has covered the industry, worked in the industry, and now publishes Do Not Pass Go, a regular newsletter and podcast focused on competition, monopoly, and corporate concentration in Canada. Peter, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Michael. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's really great to have you. We've known each other for a long time and in your many lives as a journalist and then time with Tech Savvy. And now publishing Do Not Pass Go, which is a regular newsletter and podcast focused on competition, monopoly, corporate concentration issues in Canada. And, you know, I have to say, as far as I know, it's really, I think, the only journalism venture in the country that's been so focused right now on that beat with that particular emphasis, especially on telecommunications. So with all of that background, you're really an ideal person, I think, to talk about some of the recent events that have arisen, I think in many ways structurally in the telecom market in Canada, in particular with Rogers. You wrote a piece that caught my attention, I think many others, described as Rogers becomes a tire fire. And it was triggered by the latest CCTS complaint numbers. But it came the same week as Rogers cut capital spending, offered buyout packages to roughly half of its 22,000 employees. There's a lot there. Why don't we just get us started by saying, you know, what does that 1 week convergence of all of those kinds of data points, in a sense, actually tell us? And, you know, what's the underlying story that you see taking place several years after the big merger, the Rogers-Shaw merger, closed?
Yeah, well, first up, I just want to say I think you are right. I do have a monopoly on focusing on monopolies, ironically. But yeah, in regards to Rogers, I think when you put all of these news events together over the past week, it's really painting a picture of a company that seems to be almost too big to care. As in, it doesn't care about customers. It doesn't care about regulatory or government scrutiny or action. And there's probably good reason for that because, you know, this has been the case for years and years and years, is that consumers in Canada really don't have much of a choice when it comes to a lot of the products and services that Rogers does offer. And there certainly hasn't been any indication, at least for the past years, 10 years, that any policymaker is really going to do anything serious to change that. Now, the Shaw merger, I think, was really the final word on that because it was opposed by literally everybody in the country who didn't stand to profit off of it in one shape or form. And that was including, of course, the Competition Bureau and the government's own industry committee. And yet the federal government went ahead and allowed it anyway. So Rogers, and basically you can include Bell and Telus in there, is they can really do anything that they want, and it doesn't seem to matter. That and that should be concerning for consumers and for the employees at these companies, and also for, I think, for investors as well.
Yeah. Well, why don't we start with that consumer side in particular? So the CCTS numbers, the Commissioner for Complaints and Telecommunication Services, hopefully I have that acronym right.
Television is in there too.
Is it? Okay. It's always hard to keep track. Yep. There's all, you know, the numbers that are out are really something. Rogers Shaw complaints up 95%, Fido up 155%, and Rogers now accounting for 44% of all telecom complaints in the country. You know, that's a pretty big change. You know, perhaps you just answered it by saying that they're too big to care, but what's driving some of this, at least at a more granular level? You know, is it billing issues, service issues? Is this about the post-merger integration, or is it basically all of the above?
Yeah, so the numbers that were released last week, they were this was the CCTS's mid-year update. I believe it was covering was it August, the beginning of August 2025 to the end of January this year, I believe it was. And so those numbers actually come on top of three record numbers or three annual reports by the CCTS showing record complaints 3 years in a row. I had the CCTS Commissioner José Vidal Thibault on my podcast in January, and we talked about those 3 straight years of record complaints. And her explanation of it was that she believes people are becoming more, or people are just generally more sensitive to telecom issues now because of the larger cost of living crisis. And I do think that that's part of it. You know, the people are very aware of what they're spending on everything, and they're becoming very sensitive to any sort of price increases, whether it's groceries, whether it's telecom bills, et cetera. The other part of it, though, I think does relate to what I said just a second ago, which is that the companies, I don't think, really care. There's been a real shift in our society over the last few years. I'm not sure where you would pinpoint it, but not just in telecom, but across sectors, to the point where, you know, if you remember not so long ago, there was a saying, the customer is always right. But it seems like right now the saying is the customer doesn't really matter. This is happening across airlines. It's happening in groceries, et cetera, et cetera. I'll give you a little bit of a quick anecdote on my own. I recently got, I used to be a customer on Koodo, my wireless provider, and out of nowhere I got a $7 increase on my monthly bill. I tried to contact the company online, no luck. I called in. This was actually appalling. I called in and I couldn't get in touch with a human. Instead, I was sent a text message, which basically sent me to a conversation with a bot, and the phone, and I was hung up on. And so I asked the bot for a human to call me, and the bot said it would. I did this on two separate occasions. No one ever called me. The result, I filed a CCTS complaint. Ironically, I got it solved really quickly. Just a few days later, somebody from Koodo, which is of course owned by TELUS, called me up, solved my issue. I ended up switching service providers. But it's funny because I was looking, it started getting me thinking, and I'm looking into this right now, is obviously customer service costs the telcos money, and CCTS complaints do as well. I don't know if the general public is aware of that, but when you do place a complaint with the CCTS, it costs the telco money. It costs them more depending on what stage that complaint goes to. The more elevated the complaint gets, the more it costs them. I'm actually starting to wonder whether the telcos have done the math and figured out that it actually costs them less to provide no customer service and funnel people to the CCTS. And maybe that's part of why these complaint numbers are exploding. And it's funny because you figure that only a small fraction of customers are going to the CCTS. Many people don't even know about it. So, you know, these companies did outsource complaints, or sorry, they outsourced customer service to foreign countries years ago. We know that. So maybe this is a case of them further outsourcing to the CCTS. Again, I would say this isn't just endemic to telecom. You look at the airlines. The federal government just announced in the spring economic update that they're because there's so many complaints with the airlines, they're going to be outsourcing those from the Canadian Transportation Authority to a third party. I don't know if we have too many details on that, but it's part of what's happening in society at large.
Well, I have to say, I mean, if that's the corporate strategy to basically say no customer service and we'll bear whatever costs arise with respect to a few complaints on an agency that too many Canadians still haven't heard of, that makes for a pretty depressing sort of thought, at least in terms of where things are at. You know, speaking of corporate strategy, though, looking at Rogers, there's a bit of an elephant in the room in terms of where they have put their money. So if they're not putting it into customer service, where are they putting it? Well, seems pretty clear that since the Rogers deal, they're putting it largely into sports. You know, they did the $11 billion renewal on NHL rights. They've paid billions for Bell's stake in MLSE. They took another $4 billion plus that they're committing for the rest of the stake in MLSE. They want to be the full owner, consolidate all of the sports, media, entertainment into a single entity. Their media revenues were way up. in the last quarter. And so all of this is against significant amount of debt while they are cutting the amount they are spending on the network, as we mentioned, by about 30%, and cutting, or at least proposing to potentially cut half of the telecom workforce with offering buyouts. So, isn't the read here that it sure seems like Rogers wants to be a sports and sports media company, and that telecom is about generating some cash flow to fund some of that? Do you think that's what's happening? And if it is, what does it mean for both telecom customers, and then even more broadly, I guess, government strategy that has been very focused on Rogers as being one of the obviously key telecom companies as part of a broader communication strategy?
Yeah, there's no doubt that sports is the focus here. Now, Rogers has indicated that it doesn't want to buy the rest of MLSE that it doesn't currently own, which is about 25%. I think they're planning to do that this summer. That would give them full control of MLSE, and I think they have indicated that they want to spin that off or sell stakes in it to help pay down the company's debt. But yeah, there's no doubt that sports is the focus of this company. And the reason there, it's pretty clear. There's lots of growth in sports, and almost as importantly, there's zero government or regulatory scrutiny there. It's kind of a license to print money when you own the teams, the venues, and the broadcaster. They even with 75% control of MLSE, Rogers has a total monopoly in Toronto sports. They own the Leafs, the Blue Jays, the Raptors, TFC, the Argonauts. They own the Rogers Centre. They own the Scotiabank Arena, and so on and so on. There's potentially many more teams to buy. You can look at a company like based in Boston, Fenway Sports Group. It's almost seems to be a model for what Rogers is doing. This is a company that is Fenway Sports Group has become this international sports conglomerate. That is a potential route there for Rogers to go if they want to go that way. Another comparison, though, I think that it's possibly a lot more relevant to us here in North America, as it seems like Rogers is quickly becoming Canada's Live Nation, and I that's certainly not a good thing given what's happening with Live Nation these days. You've got antitrust trials going all over the place. But on the other hand, though, it's also not a terrible thing. It's actually from a business perspective, it's usually a good thing for a company to pivot to growth when your core business has become commoditized, which I think telecom has. Internet access and wireless access is it's dumb pipes, right? It's there's and we're seeing. I think we're going to talk a little bit about what some of the Bay Street analysts are saying and how there's not a lot of growth left in that business. So. It is on the other hand, though, it is concerning when for everyone else when that pivot when you're making that pivot into what is a totally monopolized sector. So Live Nation, again, going back to Live Nation, they're getting a lot of attention now because of ticket prices with concerts. But I think we are very quickly realizing that the same thing is happening with sports. Going back to the telecom side, it is still very important because, as you pointed out, even though it's commoditized, it is the source of cash for all of this growth and this expansion. It's not competitive, and it's a steady source of cash for Rogers, and that's basically it's the cash cow that's funding everything else the company wants to do.
Yeah, no, that's a really good summary of both of where some of those opportunities might lie and what may help explain some of that shift. The other narrative that is being pushed by Rogers and by some of the analysts is that this is, in fact, structural change that's taking place in the business. This notion that AI is reshaping network operations, wireless prices are falling, population growth now in Canada is flat after years of very rapid growth driven a lot by immigration. How much weight do you give these market and technology forces? Is this really AI, or is AI really almost a convenient way to externalize blame for some of the choices that the company's actually making?
Yeah, I don't discount it completely. I think there's a lot of veracity in what some of the, especially the Bay Street analysts are saying. Like I said, the growth for the telecom business is pretty much it's not happening. Canada's immigration levels have slowed, so population growth has slowed. There's just not a lot of new customers. There's also only so much you can squeeze from your existing customers before policymakers have to crack down. And how much they've cracked down in Canada is a point of debate, but I think we reached the point of the squeezing. We've reached that saturation point a long time ago in Canada. The telcos seem to have been having a raging party here in Canada for a very long time, and now it's finally coming to an end because they've run out of ways to extract for the same stuff. And I think the Rogers Shaw merger was a great example. Mega mergers only ever happen when big companies run out of interesting things to do, and it's the way to keep that party going for a little bit longer. And I think we've reached the point where the party is kind of the telecom party is kind of coming to an end. And going back to pivoting and going into other businesses. You look at the big players in Canada, and they've all, in different ways, tried to do that. Rogers is heading into sports. TELUS has tried to go into health and into, digital management or consulting services to varying degrees of success. And Bell, I'm not quite sure what Bell is doing. I think Bell is kind of hooking its wagon to AI. And I think they've made a purchase or two in the US of fiber companies. So to some extent, Bell is sticking a little bit closer to, one would consider its core competencies. So, that's what you're supposed to do. So I don't necessarily disagree with some of the takes out there. As for AI, I think we might look back in a few years, and there's a lot of conversation out there about how AI is like, some people believe it's like the biggest misallocation of capital in our lifetimes. we'll see. I don't know. I don't have a view on AI, to be honest, as far as the spending on it is concerned.
Okay, fair enough. You alluded to it, or at least hinted at it briefly there, in terms of where the regulatory piece fits in. Rogers explicitly blamed what they described as punitive regulatory environment for some of the CapEx cuts, pointing specifically to the CRTC's wholesale fiber decision. Now, you've written in detail about that ruling and in this area more broadly. You lived it for a number of years. Groups like CNOC have called it the end of independent internet competition, and it feels like we've been building towards that for some time. Can you describe a bit what came out of that ruling, and what does Rogers framing, when they call the entire system punitive, tell us about its take on the wholesale market?
Yeah, for sure. I would love to know what they mean by punitive, because that's interesting. As a journalist observer for a very long time, and as you know, obviously spending a few years at Tech Savvy, which is a competitor, to me, it's been anything but punitive. The regulatory environment has been anything but punitive on the big telcos for a very long time. Last week's ruling, or the recent ruling that we had regarding the fiber rates, the fiber wholesale rates. So that was really focusing on Bell and TELUS, as well as SaskTel, I believe. And so Bell's various units out in East Alliant and MTS in Manitoba, basically fiber networks, not so much cable companies like Rogers and Videotron. Essentially, what happened there is why CNOC basically declared that ruling to be the death of independent internet competition is because the CRTC decided to leave those fiber wholesale access rates high. And just for the uninitiated, wholesale access rates are extremely important because they affect directly and indirectly what pretty much every Canadian pays for internet access. Because what you have is you have retail services from the big players, Bell, Rogers, TELUS, Videotron, et cetera, and then you have smaller competitors who access their networks on a wholesale basis. So these are companies that typically don't have their own networks, so they'll pay to use the networks of those big companies, and the CRTC sets those rates that they pay the bigger companies. And so with fiber networks are, I guess they're not really new anymore, but they're, relatively new. The CRTC initially set access rates to those networks that were generally owned by telephone companies, Bell, TELUS. They set them quite high years ago, basically not to allow those companies to recoup the billions of dollars that they had spent building those networks. Sure enough, but that doesn't really help out the competition. It doesn't help out the competitive forces. It doesn't allow the independents to access those networks and then sell services that are, affordable to their customers. So That's what CNOOC is basically saying, is they left those rates high. It's not going to allow them to sell services at reasonable rates to customers, and that's bad news for them. So it's interesting because that ruling really was applicable to the phone companies, Bell and Telus. Didn't really affect Rogers because we're not talking about the wholesale access rates to cable networks like what Rogers has. But Rogers has been winning there for at least 7 years because the cable wholesale rates are still out at sea. And the very important thing about that is that the majority of Canadian internet subscribers are still on cable. So if you want to go further, since 2015, the federal government has handed out in excess of $7 billion in broadband funding and subsidies. And much of that has been hoovered up by the big companies. Further, Rogers got to take over Shaw. So it is funny that they still complain about a punitive regulatory environment. What they call punitive, some people I think would call petulant.
Fair enough. I think that many would have a sort of a double take with that kind of description. You're right. Why don't we turn to the one other really big issue that in some ways feels like has sparked much of what's happened over the last number of years, and that is, of course, that Rogers Shaw merger. Several years ago, the minister at the time, Champagne, secured what he described as legally binding commitments, billions, he said, and investment in Western Canada's network infrastructure, thousands of new jobs in Western Canada within 5 years, and the maintenance of pricing and Calgary as the Western headquarters for at least a decade for Rogers. So there's protection for the pricing and financial penalties for non-compliance. But when we see what's taking place now with CapEx being cut, roughly half the workforce being offered buyouts, what does it tell us about the commitments? Are they still operative? Has the government said anything about some of these recent developments?
So I did hear back from ISED when I was working on that story. They got back to me and they said something to the effect of the government is not going to shirk from its duty to ensure a fair and competitive marketplace. But, I don't know what that actually means. I think that and $68 will get me a Bell fiber wholesale internet connection. Sorry, that's some deep cut telecom humor. So we haven't seen anything on actually enforcing those commitments, and these sort of commitments are a little bit laughable in the first place whenever they're attached to any merger scenario, because they're not so much a list of things the company can't do, but it's almost like an instruction manual on all the things they can do. So it's like, as opposed to a blacklist, it's a whitelist. Here's all the things. Like, I'll give you a great example. One of those commitments was actually attached to Videotron, which Videotron got to buy Freedom Mobile from Shaw, basically as part of that whole merger. And the commitment there was Freedom Mobile has to maintain pricing, wireless pricing, 20% below what the incumbents are charging, generally speaking. And like, when you think about it, that's such a silly commitment because it essentially means, well, Rogers could charge you $1,000 a month for your cell phone, as long as Videotron is in at $800, everything's copacetic. So it's a really these commitments are generally very easy to get around. So you want to look at the other commitments. The Rogers committed to maintaining jobs in the West. Again, you ask questions about that. How do you count those? Is there funny accounting involved? It also doesn't really say anything about layoffs, laying people off in the rest of Canada, right? You can lay off as many people in Ontario as you want, apparently. So I'll take you outside of telecom again. Recently, the federal government allowed a merger. They allowed a British company, the resource company, Anglo American, to take over Vancouver's Teck Resources on the premise that the British company is going to maintain the headquarters in Vancouver. But no one in the resource industry believes that's really going to happen. So I think it's safe to treat, any and all merger conditions with a very low level of seriousness. And it's especially true in the Rogers Shaw case.
Okay. All right, a couple of questions that I got of it in some ways. I don't know if they're rhetorical or real, but I'd still welcome your thoughts. Let's start with Champagne. I remember describing the way the government would approach this Rogers merger. He said he was going to watch the company like a hawk. He's now the finance minister. Navdeep Bains, who was involved, there at that time, or for many years as the ICE minister, went first to the CIBC, then went to Rogers as the chief corporate affairs officer, and is now stepping down apparently to run for the Ontario Liberal leadership. I guess it begs the question, was this a serious enforcement architecture or really just, political theater, in order to greenlight the deal?
Yeah, I love it when they break out the hawk analogy. We're gonna watch it like a hawk. It's reiterated by Champagne's successor in the ICE as ICE minister, Melanie Joly, back in October. She said that this government is going to be hawkish on competition. It's tough talk. Do we ever see it backed up with tough walk? I don't know. I guess we'll see. But so far, no. And I think you talk to anybody in the industry, and I don't think there's anyone who ever doubted that the Rogers Shaw merger was ever going to happen, except for maybe Matthew Boswell, the competition commissioner, because he's obviously the one who challenged it. And I think that general belief was there because this is just generally not the way we do things in Canada. Maybe Boswell thought he could defeat this merger because he's somewhat of an idealist, which I think is admirable. But yeah, there's a real revolving door problem here. I mean, at one point in time, this is actually kind of it was pointed out to me the other day, and I had never actually realized this, but there was a point in time where the deputy finance minister was Michael Sabia, who's a former CEO of Bell, the industry minister of Navdeep Bains, who went on to work at Rogers, and the CRTC chair was Ian Scott, who was a former TELUS executive. And just to add on to that, the mayor of Toronto was John Tory, who was literally moonlighting on the Rogers Trust while he was mayor. So going back to how is this a punitive environment for telcos? Anyways, opposition MPs raised concerns when Navdeep Bains took that Rogers job in 2023. And I think they're going to rightfully raise those same concerns as he looks to lead the Ontario Liberals. What's interesting, though, is that part of the spring economic update that the federal government just delivered, there's a whole of government competition strategy that was part of that. And there's the we're going to see, the old cliche has already been hauled out, the devil is in the details, which we don't have details on that as of yet. But as it stands, given that situation and given that revolving door, that long history of revolving doors, I don't think that whole of government competition strategy is starting out with a lot of credibility, but we'll see how it goes. And I think if they are really serious about improving the competitive situation in Canada, not just in telecom, but in general, the obvious place to start is with that revolving door.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair point. In terms of the credibility of that plan, I mean, part of the question I think around credibility is that if we go back several years, to go back to telecom space and then particularly the merger, you had, as you mentioned, Competition Bureau with Matthew Boswell. You had the committees that examined this, independent ISPs, academics and experts who study this, saying that, this was the outcome or the predicted outcome, higher concentration, weaker independence, higher pricing, and commitments at the end of the day. Wouldn't really make much of a difference. We're 3 years later, so is what we are watching basically the foreseeable or even really foreseen end game for where this, for what the results or the effects of this merger was likely to be?
I think so. It's literally the chickens coming home to roost. I think you'd be hard pressed to find any mega merger in history that has delivered positive results for consumers and affected that have delivered positive results for consumers and affected employees. These, I'm sure there's the exception, but they're rare, if not impossible to find. It's really interesting because I spoke recently with Lawson Hunter, who used to work at Bell, but more importantly, he was the chief architect of the Competition Act that we have, our main competition law here in Canada. And one thing that he said that was really interesting to me was he said that something along the lines of, competition law is not supposed to be fair. When you look at this in the context of mega mergers, and when you look at it in the context of how companies behave, companies are going to company, oligopolies are going to oligopoly, monopolies are going to monopoly. None of the competition law is supposed to really look at fairness or deal with fairness. That is literally the government's job. So ultimately, the buck eventually goes to the government. And if anything's going to change, the government, I think it's got to start with the government. Not that we need a change in government. I'm just saying that the government itself needs to change its attitude towards this sort of thing.
Okay. I mean, that provides a really nice segue to where I think where I wanted to close, which is, given where we're at, what, if anything, can the government, can policymakers do to meaningfully change the trajectory that you've been describing? I mean, it's specifically around telecom, but we could think of it, I suppose, more broadly. Are there policy levers that they still haven't pulled, or is the practical answer that, we saw this coming, and so, you made your bed, and we're Canadian consumers are basically going to have to lay in it.
Yeah, I think so. As I'm comfortable as a journalist to just observe and report, and this is as maybe as strident as I get on this stuff, but and there are certainly much smarter people than I who can prescribe to solutions or can prescribe solutions, and I love speaking with them. If anything, any of my views are basically arrived at from speaking with them. When it comes to telecom, specifically, I think policymakers already know the answer and it's right in front of them, and they're just sort of being dragged, kicking and screaming into it. And that is wholesale. Building exclusive networks is as dumb as building multiple airports. It's expensive and impractical, just like, a city like Toronto, although we have one big airport, one small airport. It doesn't make sense for Toronto to have six competing airports, even though that would probably drive down the price of flights. The CRTC has acknowledged this, and they're creating a system now where they're encouraging Bell and TELUS to sell internet service across each other's networks in their opposing territories. And the same is true on wireless, where they're encouraging mid-sized cable companies like Cogeco to become mobile virtual network operators, and basically where you use the big three's networks to develop your own service and networks and so on. And in both cases, though, they're actively discouraging or maybe even trying to kill smaller independent providers. And I don't really know why this is happening, but I think they became convinced that maybe that these smaller operators are fly-by-night operators that can't be relied on for long-term competition. I don't know. It's certainly true in some cases, but they're also, I think the CRTC is also going to learn that if they focus on these big players, becoming some sort of wholesale-based competitors, that's not going to work. It might in the short term, but these guys have every incentive to achieve equilibrium. And then any competition on price or whatever that we might be seeing now, I think it's fair to say that the prices on wireless have come down somewhat over the past few years. But I don't think anybody believes that that's long-term or sustainable. So I'm not an economist, but it's basic economics. Big players do not compete, they equalize. So whether or not you trust small players to be in it for the long term or not, you need them because some of them do, in fact, compete. And that's what creates better outcomes for customers and employees and even investors. So I think that's the main lever that it's not even really a lever as it is almost like a behavior or position is that I do think that this focus on the big companies is wrongheaded and there needs to be some sort of adjustment to allow smaller competitors in because they're the ones that discipline the bigger guys and they're the ones that innovate. So, there's other levers we could talk about, but those are a little bit less likely. Things like structural separation. I've always liked structural separation. But again, that's a topic for smarter people. Something we've seen floated recently, particularly by Avi Lewis of the NDP is, Crown Corporation competitors. Maybe you have a not necessarily even a company that's designed to make money, but it is a company more designed, a competitor designed to discipline those big companies and bring prices down. Another idea that's been floated out there, and I think the UK tried this, was to have your post office be the competitor for telecom services. Given what's going on with Canada Post, who knows? Maybe that's a growth area for them. Again, these are all ideas. And I think the thing that bums me out about Canada most is that we just don't seem to want to try new ideas, even to try them out. And even if they fail, it just we're quite conservative that way. And it's unfortunate.
Yeah, no, it's true. There's a tendency not to be aggressive, not to think necessarily out of the box, and in some ways we've paid for some of these things because we haven't seen the kind of competition or the changes in the marketplace that I think many had hoped for. If anything, as this conversation I think highlights, We've seen a move in the opposite direction, and much of this, as we've talked about, is in many ways was foreseeable, and I think really foreseen. Peter, you've been at the heart of much of thinking about where things are headed and covering where things have been headed for many, many years now, and you're doing a really remarkable job with your latest venture. Thank you both for that work that you're doing and for joining me here today on the podcast.
Thank you, Michael. It was my pleasure. Anytime.
That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbites@pobox.com. That's LAWBYTES at pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter at lawbitespod or follow Michael Geist at mgeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca or subscribe at iTunes, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo LeBron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose LeBron LeBoy. Credit information for clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening and see you next time.